Welcome to the Outspoken Offender Podcast. I'm a filmmaker, podcaster, dog dad, and of course an advocate. I encourage people forced to register and their family members to move beyond stereotypes and social ostracism. Welcome to the show. How are you today? It's the Outspoken Offender Podcast. Thanks for joining me. Today I'm talking about except for sex offenders when it comes to prison reentry and the criminal justice system reform efforts going on in this country. It's a problem. I've seen it a lot. I've read it a lot. And what's happening is we're seeing basically two branches of reform or resources for reentry. We have one side, the typical, I'll just say the typical former offender, someone that was incarcerated with a felony record other than a sex offense. We have that branch. And then on the other side, the other branch of this tree is people convicted of a sexual offense. And people are being left out. And who are being left out? Well, we know it's people convicted of sex offenses. And today I want to talk about some examples of reentry services that are saying, we'll help you if you have a felony, but if you have a sex offense, we're not. And then at the end of the podcast, I'm going to talk about organizations that are helping and some possibilities that may help you if you happen to be in a situation where you need assistance. At any one time, nearly 6.9 million people are on probation, in jail, in prison, or on parole in this country. Each year, more than 600,000 individuals are released from state and federal prisons. Another 9 million cycle through local jails. And furthermore, according to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, as of 2016, there were 859,500 registered sex offenders in the United States. So that was 5 years ago. We know that number to be much higher now, most likely over a million. As I was doing research for this podcast, I actually had a very challenging time locating organizations that assist sex offenders in the reentry process. I'm not specifically talking about organizations such as Women Against Registry or NARSOL. They're wonderful organizations, but I'm targeting more reentry services that assist you from incarceration into reintegrating into society. The individuals that need help the most are not getting it. And those are people convicted of sexual offenses. Already, with the registry at least, they are seeing restrictions that are outlandish in some areas. You can't live this far from a school, you can't live near this location, you can't go there, can't do that, things like that. All under this assumption that we are protecting children and society, which has been proven time and time that the registry and the laws and restrictions put into place have really no effect on public safety. The Paul Murphy story. I'm not sure if you're aware of this story. Paul Murphy was originally sentenced to 3 years of probation after his conviction in 2011 on charges of aggravated child pornography. Now, Murphy was impoverished and homeless at this time. And after he was found violating his parole by sleeping in the doorway of a church, he was ordered to serve his sentence in prison. He finally was approved to be released from custody in March 2014 into the state's mandatory supervised release program. But because he was homeless and couldn't find a place to live that satisfied the what we know of the crazy restrictions and regulations, Murphy, who was 61 at the time, had to remain in prison. So here is a gentleman that has finished his sentence, but because no one will approve his housing plan, he remained in prison. Finally, he applied for housing at a halfway house in East St. Louis that honestly was the only one in Illinois that accepted sex offenders. One place in Illinois accepting people with sex offenses. Insane, just outrageous in my opinion. Murphy was told that there was a 5-year wait at the time he applied for this halfway house. And then the facility had since closed at that time. And so he filed a lawsuit, and it contends, quote, Murphy faces imprisonment in the Illinois Department of Corrections for the rest of his life. It could have happened. If he never found a place, he could have remained in prison. Luckily, he has been released since. I did some research on that, but he served more time than his original sentence because of sex offender restrictions and regulations. The story of Landro Yance. Are you familiar with this gentleman? In 2011, he was convicted of rape in third degree for having sex at age 26 with a 14-year-old, and he was sentenced to 6 months in jail. His sex offender status now meant he could not live within 1,000 feet of a school at the time, which in his home of New York City ruled out pretty much everywhere. Yance said he had no way to search for a place to live from prison. His father and cousin's homes were rejected, and he was quoted by saying, quote, I know a guy who put in 19 addresses and got denied at all of them. It's impossible for us to live anywhere, end quote. Now, ultimately, the Brooklyn Defender Services found him a bed at a three-quarter house in a remote Queens neighborhood where the public assistance covered most of his $250 that he paid each month to share a room. Get this, share a room with four men and shower with 17 of them. An open shower and rooming with four other men. This was the only place he can find. And it ended up being that Yance moved into this place in Queens more than a month past his maximum sentence. This is happening a lot. These are not rare occurrences because people with a sex offense that cannot find housing sometimes will remain in prison past their sentence. Now, just a personal side note, I do remember a lot of talk with my case manager when I was incarcerated, and he stressed, it's got to be approved, it can't have this, it can't have that, and I remember talking to a lot of the other guys in there saying the same problem. They were worried that they wouldn't be able to get to a halfway house or be even released at their release date because of a lack of residents that met the qualifications. I now want to shift my focus on post-incarceration. What organizations, what businesses reject sex offenders? Now, of course, I'm not going to go through all of these, but I want to give you a few examples on the situation. And I want to start off with the Small Business Administration. They provide small businesses with low-interest loans to help recover from disasters, including the financial disasters that has been seen by the coronavirus outbreak. The loans can save companies and their employees from going under during difficult times. Now, I read this article on, I think it was Women Against Registry. The SBA, the Small Business Administration, is here to save small businesses. A lot of people that have been through prison find starting their own business is probably easier than going out and finding work. But the Small Business Administration will help companies unless they are owned by a person registered as a sex offender. This is not a joke. Registered sex offenders are ineligible. Now, to qualify for loans from institutions participating in the Small Business Lending Fund, businesses must certify that none of their principals has been convicted of or pled no contest to a sex offense against a minor. What about Goodwill? Another personal side note, in the past, a few years ago, I had applied for a Goodwill job and I was denied several times. Now, back then I was thinking, okay, maybe just Utah doesn't like it. You know, maybe Utah Goodwills don't hire people convicted of sex offenses. Well, I did some research and I'm starting to see that is not true. I believe this is a national restriction. As you may know, Goodwill provides job training, employment placement services, and other community-based programs for people who have barriers preventing them from otherwise obtaining a job. That is like their mission statement. Barriers preventing them from finding a job. A light bulb goes up in my head. I mean, we're talking about people that have been incarcerated, and especially people with sex offenses. But no, Goodwill says no. I looked around online and I found an official online job application for the South Central Wisconsin Goodwill. Their criminal background policy states, now I'm quoting here, Goodwill is committed to hiring and supporting the employment of individuals with criminal backgrounds. However, some positions at Goodwill cannot be held by individuals with particular criminal convictions. So we must ask whether you have ever been convicted of a law violation or any other pending charges against you, end quote. Now, look, it doesn't say specifically we don't allow sex offenders, but more research that I have found, and I am reading people's experiences that have applied there, my experience, and just a general feel that they are discriminatory against people with sex offenses. Now, according to one man's experience I read online, and again, I'm quoting, sex offenders do not need to bother with Goodwill. I am a sex offender and I went to a Goodwill employment job fair. The orientation paperwork stated clearly that murderers and sex offenders are excluded, end quote. We all know housing for people with sex offenses is extremely challenging to find. But then we go to senior communities, and that's kind of a different story. We have older people that need additional assistance, but at this Buena Vista senior community, except for sex offenders. Here's their clause. Sex offenders. If the applicant or any household member has a conviction other than acquittal for any sexual offense, the application will be rejected. And then it goes to say sex offender registration. If the applicant or any household member is subject to registration under a state lifetime sex offender registration program, the application will be rejected. This, again, is not a rare occurrence. It's not just one senior community. There are many, many, many senior communities. Just imagine you have a sex offense for 30 years ago and you have nowhere else to go. You need to have assistance in a assisted living. And every place that you contact denies you because of a very old offense. You would think an organization like Volunteers of America would assist people with sex offenses. No. The Coventry Place 2 consists of 39 one-bedroom mid-rise apartments. This is managed and it's all connected through the Volunteers of America. According to their little blurb here, applicants must not have been convicted from any other federally assisted housing, including project-based or tenant-based subsidy, public housing, or LIHTC developments for drug-related criminal activity within 3 years. Okay, well, I didn't hear anything about sex offenses. So I wanted to read that because it's giving you a time frame. 3 years, within 3 years. Okay, now that's good and bad, but at least there's some time frame for other offenses. But then when we move to the sex offenders clause, it reads, applicants must not have been convicted to any determination showing guilt, such as entry of probation before judgment, for any degree of sexual offenses within the applicant's lifetime. You are barred for life. It doesn't matter if it's been 70 years ago. You will not get into this place through a huge organization, Volunteers of America. An additional clause there, it says sex offender registration. Applicants must not be currently court mandated to registration as a sex offender. Okay, so no registered sex offenders and then no sex offenders, period, no matter if you're on the list or not. I move on now to the Urban Ministries of Durham. Oh boy, they connect with community to end homelessness and fight poverty by offering food, shelter, and a future to neighbors in need. Oh, but I guess people on the registry, they don't need any help, according to your Urban Ministries. This is actually an emergency shelter. That's part of it. That's part of their program. And it offers a bed for 14 days, during which the Urban Ministries of Durham staff will use assessment tools to match them to a specific journey program track. On the front page of their website, you can check it out. It says it right there. Everyone is welcome to the shelter except for sex offenders and if the client is on the shelter ban list. Except for sex offenders. I don't know about you. I'm trying not to be negative. Oh, I have some good news at the end, though. So this is not all bad. But before we get to that, St. Patrick's Church Financial Assistance. I mean, my God, this is a Catholic church, right? You would think that a religious organization would accept everyone, right?
No.
You're wrong. St. Patrick's Church, they provide a food pantry, shelter, assistance with gas utilities, and other assistance such as clothing, bus fare, and gas money. So they serve all the population there in the Five Cities area, Aurora Grande, California. But on their website, right there, in caps, the word "except" is in capitals, except for sex offenders. Does it have any relations to the Catholic Church issues with child abuse? I don't know, and I'm not going to talk about that issue on this podcast episode, but you never know. Okay, so this one is actually a little confusing, but it's very important. It is the Clean Slate legislation for Connecticut. There's a woman, Rogsbert King. She requested to the Board of Pardons and Parole for a pardon. Now, it was eventually approved. So during the legislative session, she teamed up with the Congregations Organized for a New Connecticut. It's acronym CONECT. They wanted to promote a clean slate bill that would have expunged people's criminal records if they remain crime-free for up to 5 years after serving their sentences. Very recent, just last month, on May 27, 2021, the House of Representatives voted 91-56 for final passage of a clean slate bill in Connecticut. So this is where this gets interesting. The governor there, Ned Lamont, who actually proposed a more modest version back last year covering selected misdemeanors, actually expressed concern about the reach of a bill that was revised at the insistence of House Democrats to make crimes involving children and other vulnerable victims ineligible for expungement. The governor was quoted saying, "I would tend to walk before I run. I tend to start with a smaller set of non-violent crimes, show that the system works, and then expand from there. That would be my inclination," end quote. So as confusing as it is, we have a narrowed down or watered down bill there that is excluding some sex offenses depending on the situation. If you search online, Clean Slate Bill Connecticut, you're going to find more information there about what is happening. And this is very recent, within the last month or two. And in fact, I want to go back to the halfway house situation. I did find a halfway house that accepts sex offenders, but the community outrage was evident. So there was an email sent to Springfield News Leader in Missouri. And this is what this original email, the body of the email said, quote, "Not sure if this is something you're interested in, but there is a halfway house located in a residential neighborhood with as many as 8 registered sex offenders," end quote. So here's a community member concerned that there is a halfway house accepting sex offenders. Community outrage. So here is a halfway house saying we need to help people convicted of sex offenses reintegrate into society, but society says, oh my God, get them out of my neighborhood. So the story continues. Robertson and Recovery Chapel, that's the place, made news. This happened in 2012. Now, according to Robinson, the men his program serves qualify as mentally handicapped under the Federal Fair Housing Act because they are recovering alcoholics and drug addicts. He also said that the recovery programs he runs aim to help ex-inmates stay sober and reintegrate into society. Not all are sex offenders, although he acknowledges many are. He says, quote, "Because we're the only program willing to take the risk of managing this difficult population, everyone comes to us," end quote. I mean, if that quote doesn't say it all, I don't know what will. I mean, I'm being sarcastic here, but do we have to find another planet in the universe to send people with sex offenses to live their lives? I mean, I know that sounds silly, but it almost feels that way sometimes, where in the United States, at least, you cannot integrate after a sexual offense, or it's very, very difficult. So I'm going to end this podcast episode on a positive note. There are organizations that do assist people with sex offenses. A few and far between, but they are out there. So programs that do help, and there is a big organization that is gaining a lot of positive attention, Circles of Support and Accountability, or COSA. Their goal is no more victims. They provide sex offenders released from prison with pro-social support as they return to society and emphasizes accountability by insisting that offenders accept responsibility for their actions. I don't have a personal experience with them, but I've heard many, many good things. There's also something that I found that I was not aware of during my research. the organization is called Let Our House Be Your Home. It's a nonprofit organization with an emphasis on returning citizens, paroled and released inmates, both male and female, seeking to overcome life's obstacles in a safe environment conducive to this objective. They have a therapeutic residential housing and counseling service for male sex offenders exiting the Georgia Department of Correction prison system. The program is designed to be a transitional step down from incarceration into community living. Wonderful, wonderful news. Unfortunately, that's only in Georgia. We need more locations like this. We need more support. Reset Missouri, I am on their board of directors. I have to mention them, just because, not just because I'm on their board, it's because I knew they do amazing work. They provide housing for sexual offenders in the St. Louis area. Again, few and far between. When it comes to housing and jobs or just support. And that was the big reason why I wanted to do this episode today, because I'm seeing that branch split and it concerns me. And I don't know exactly what the answer is, but I hope that our politicians and, you know, voters and the community start to realize that if we continue to ostracize the sex offender community or the individuals and their families, we're going to have a bigger problem on our hands. Thank you for listening to this episode. I am The Outspoken Offender, and I'll talk to you next time. Welcome to the Outspoken Offender Podcast. I'm a filmmaker, podcaster, dog dad, and of course, an advocate. I encourage people forced to register and their family members to move beyond stereotypes and social ostracism. Welcome to the show.